From CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal, Quebec, my name is Iago Sosky, and this, my friends, is once again Liberty in Exile.
I ask you to join me in helping restore the individual freedoms and initiatives this nation once knew, to make government more the servant and not the master of us all. In this free nation, we do not choose to be ruled. We elect to be governed.
In your heart, you know he's right.
Friends, Romans, countrymen, lend me your ears. I come to bring you liberty, not destroy it. The evil the governments do lives after them. The good is often turned with their bones, so let it be with liberty in exile. Hello and welcome to the program. My name is Yael Osaski. I am your host today, reporting to you from the bustling metropolis that is Montreal, Quebec, in Gitmo Nation, Great White North, on this, the 24th day of September 2010. Number here at CJLO is 514-848-7471. Our website, as always, and shall continue to stand, is libertyinexile.com, libertyinexile.com. There we have the blog, the Twitter feed, the links, the podcast, the videos, and more. I'll offer it to you free of charge. Also, check out the iTunes podcast, quite popular with the interwebs, and I hope it shall be to you as well. We have many interesting stories to go over today, many different things. I have economic news, and of course, as everyone knows who does visit the website, I do like to put categories on the certain stories that I shall cover. Categories today: We Broke, Big Sister, Big Brother, War is Peace, Free Crack, The Assassination State, Disinfo Machines, and the Health Brave New World State. Now, I do have a plethora of stories. Look at that, 5 pages. Wow, that's amazing. I like to start off with money. Money is very important. Money makes the world go round. Different things with President Obama in the United States going on. There's an article here from Forbes titled, Obama's Problem with Business. The president isn't actually exactly a socialist, so what's driving his hostility to private enterprise? Now, this is a big hit piece by Forbes. Now, anyone who does not know, Forbes is a big-time magazine for entrepreneurs, millionaires, billionaires. Basically, the guy who works at the Walmart, probably not reading Forbes magazine. But I shall go on with the article. Barack Obama is the most anti-business president in a generation, perhaps in American history. Thanks to him, the era of big government is back. Obama runs up taxpayer debt not in the billions, but in the trillions. Has expanded the U.S. government's control over home mortgages, investment banking, healthcare, autos, and energy. The Weekly Standard summarizes Obama's approach as omnipotence at home, impotence abroad. The president's bizarre actions mystify critics and supporters alike. Consider this headline from the August 18, 2009 issue of The Wall Street Journal. Obama underwrites offshore drilling. Did you read that correctly? You did. The administration supports offshore drilling, but drilling off the shores of Brazil. With Obama's backing, the U.S. Export-Import Bank offered $2 billion in loans and guarantees to Brazil's state-owned oil company, Petrobras, to finance exploration in the Santo Basin, yada yada. Now, in this article, of course, they are very pro-business. They're not necessarily for a political ideology. They're just looking out for their profits, their own moolah, their own cash, as they always do. But I believe this article by Forbes is very interesting. I'm not quite sure who the guy is that wrote it, but I'm sure he might be a
douchebag.
But other than that, let's look at the other articles that I have set up for today. Now, looking at President Obama, what he's doing right now in the United States, I believe he's held true to his word in economic policy. He's done exactly what he said he would do. He didn't say that he'd exactly hear to private enterprise, but he did say that he would funnel away all this public money to private hands. He's done that many times. That's his belief. His belief, core belief in Keynesian economics. We've seen that through Krugman and Larry Summers, who just just resigned just the other day, so he will not be on on Obama's economic team. There's actually an interesting story on Democracy Now, if anyone watches that. You had Amy Goodman saying that they were so glad that he was out because he was a proponent of deregulation. I mean, he was a proponent of deregulation in the 1980s. Now he's just a proponent of increased Federal Reserve power. Hey, that makes it all the better, doesn't it? Yeah, so that's what's going on with President Obama, his fans over there at Democracy Now! But another interesting thing that's going on right now is the United Nations General Assembly is meeting. Therefore, every head of state is there to give a small speech, their view for the future of the world, and their own state's part in it. Now, I have different speeches that I'm going to play here, a couple of clips on the show. One of the most interesting, of course, has to be Obama's. He is one of the most powerful men in the world as president. I'm not going to say whether or not he is a puppet, but hey, he is the president of the United States. And we shall begin with him, Barack Obama, at the UN.
The global economy suffered an enormous blow during the financial crisis, crippling markets and deferring the dreams of millions on every continent. Underneath these challenges to our security and prosperity lie deeper fears that ancient hatreds and religious divides are once again ascendant, that a world which has grown more interconnected has somehow slipped beyond our control. These are some of the challenges that my administration has confronted since we came into office. And today I'd like to talk to you about what we've done over the last 20 months to meet these challenges, what our responsibility is to
You feeling the love?
Pursue peace in the Middle East, and what kind of world we are trying to build in this 21st century. Let me begin with what we have done. I have had no greater focus as president than rescuing our economy from potential catastrophe. And in an age when prosperity is shared, we could not do this alone. So America has joined with nations around the world to spur growth and the renewed demand that could restart job creation. We are reforming our system of global finance, beginning with Wall Street reform here at home, so that a crisis like this never happens again. And we made the G20 the focal point for international coordination. Because in a world where prosperity is more diffuse, we must broaden our circle of cooperation to include emerging economies, economies from every corner of the globe. There is much to show for our efforts, even as there is much work to be done. The global economy has been pulled back from the brink of a depression and is growing once more.
Okay, we get you. So that's Obama's speech to the UN, talking about how the continued plan needs to be more public dollars being spread amongst the populace. Now, in keeping with that theme, I have a perfect article from the Associated Press, and they're commenting upon basically all the anti-monetarist economists are coming out and saying, well, the recession actually ended in June 2009. And we're looking at the market here at the numbers, and we're saying that the recession is over, even though unemployment now stands at 9.6%, almost 10% of the working populace. Almost 30 million people are not working. But here's an article from the Associated Press. The recession is over, so where's the party? It turns out the recession ended more than a year ago. Feeling better now? The panel that determines the timing of recessions concluded Monday that this one ended, technically anyway, in June 2009 and lasted 18 months. Oh boy, what a great panel that must be. The duration makes it the longest since World War II. It may be over, but you won't be hearing any cheers from the millions of Americans who are struggling to find a job, or are worried about the ones they have, or have lost their homes, or are behind on the mortgage. Every single one of the individuals who wrote the report needs a serious reality check, said Bob Johnson of the Queens Borough of New York, who is 46, had worked in communications, and has been looking for a job for more than 3 years. Not that it's the fault of academics. In this case, the National Bureau of Economic Research, a group of economists based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, the hotbed of economical thinking. It's their job to declare when recessions officially begin an end. Hold on now. You're not having any pain? You're not having any financial burden? We shall tell you when it starts and when it ends. These guys are amazing. Their finding is one that economic historians spend a lot of time pondering. Politicians care, too. They don't want to be blamed for downturns that happen on their watch. One of those politicians is President Barack Obama, who inherited the recession. I love how they just pop that in every article. It began in December 2007, according to the Bureau. Obama found little reason Monday to celebrate that it had officially ended. The hole was so deep that a lot of people were out there hurting, said the president, whose Democratic Party faces a likely setback in the midterm elections, said at a town hall meeting sponsored by CNBC. Now, as we've seen, the governments in the United States not really doing what has to be done. Even in Canada, I think they're starting to do a little better. They're talking about cutting their deficits, which is very good. Most of the Keynesian economists, however, are big proponents of deficits. They believe in deficits. They believe that they're some of the greatest things. And in bad financial times, your deficit needs to be huge. And how do they always justify this? They say, well, during World War II, our deficit debt ratio was this percent. That's how it's always calculated. And there's still this belief that World War II got us out of the Great Depression. That's still what's written in history books nowadays. Now, you tell me, common sense-wise, how blowing up billions of bombs and killing millions of people across the world spurs economic growth. Does that grow anything? Does that grow anything but the military-industrial complex? But the huge, rampant killing of innocent human beings all across the globe in the name of a flag or a country or a symbol? There is much more literature available on this, and we shall come right back to it. I'm your host, Eli Lasosky, CGLO, 1690 AM, of Liberty in Exile. I'll be right back after these messages. All right, welcome. This is CGLO, 1690 AM, Liberty in Exile. Now, a few more clips. I'm going to play one. This comes from across the pond over there in Britain. Let's see what they're talking about.
Revenue is consulting on plans that would force employers to hand over all our pay to the government. The revenue would then deduct the tax and then pass on the balance to our bank accounts. Well, with us is Paul Lewis of Radio 4's Money Box programme. Are they serious?
I'm afraid they are, yes. Here's the paper that actually says, you know, this is improving the operation of PAYE, it's called. It's a consultation paper. The period ends on Thursday, so there's still time to comment. And I must say, talking to accountants and some politicians, they think it's a good idea. They say a lot of the mistakes that we've been talking about over the last couple of weeks are actually because employers get things wrong. And if only the revenue is in charge of all of that, then it would be okay.
Now, if only the government could take control of all of our paychecks, everything would be 100% better.
And it also says because information is always done, it's done once a year, so it's always out of date, but the revenue would have what it calls real-time information. Mm-hmm. So if something changed in the circumstances, it could change your tax at once.
So you're saying, Paul, that a lot of people are saying in principle it's quite a sound idea. Who's saying it's not? Is there anyone saying it's not a good idea?
Well, we don't know. We'll see what happens in consultation. Certainly some Moneybox listeners already emailed us to say, this is going to make us all work for the state. They'll be paid, and then they'll graciously give us a bit of our money back.
You need to be obedient slaves.
I think really the important thing is trust, really. If they had a history of everything working well, we might say, OK, take it to the next stage. But they don't. And there was a report out this week. This is actually information from the revenue saying that they had failed to collect £42 billion of tax that they should have collected. It's called the tax gap between the sort of theoretical amount and what they actually take. Now, some people are saying they should be concentrating on closing that tax gap, not doing this, because this approximate system, you know, hasn't worked, and can it really get 40 million people's pay and tax right every week or every month?
I'm sure I'm not alone in being slightly concerned about all of this. And we're used, aren't we, to get our sort of pay slip with the deductions and everything.
Yes.
It's all kind of clear. You know what's going on, don't you? Will that happen?
You do. And also, if anything goes wrong, you can go to your employer. And most people know the person in the employment office. But this paper says that, in fact, we won't get that anymore. What our employer will give us
is a percent
of your gross pay, and maybe they'll take off a union sub or a pension contribution. Uh-huh. But for the rest of it, for our tax, we'll have to log on and look at a tax account online. And it doesn't even discuss the question of what about people who don't have a computer at home where they can easily do that.
So okay, I can't listen to that anymore. So that's what's going on right over there, and we call it Gitmo Nation East, that is Great Britain. They have the greatest laws in the country. So basically the entire government is trying to usurp most of the paychecks, therefore you are paid by the state, not your private employer, whoever it may be. They shall determine how much to take out, therefore you do not necessarily own your labor, the government does. It owns you, it owns your labor. Shut up, slave, we own you. Now we're seeing that in Great Britain. Hopefully we won't see that here in North America, but you never know how things go these days. And that's a... this is a big proponent. This has been pushed by the Tax Collection Agency. Her Majesty's Revenue and Customs, HMRC. So they're trying to do this because they say it's going to be better for everyone. That's how they always do this. We're going to make you safer. Make this better. Easier. All we need to do is usurp all your funds. All we need for you to do is strip yourself at the airport and put on these huge body scanners. And that leads me onto the subject that be the Big Brother state that does exist all across North America, South America, England, Britain, and the rest. I have a great article here talking about... I knew this would happen. Now, we started talking about this many months ago here on Liberty in Exile, right before the summer began. We started talking about the hot topic at the time, and that was these airport body scanners. Now, these things cost about $250,000 apiece. Imagine that. All that money being spent to scan us, photograph us, put it all in a little database, make sure we're not carrying weapons. That's how it always is. That's how the pretext always goes, is to protect you. Make sure that you're safe in all cases. That's what we want. We want you safe. We don't want you to have terrorist bombs. We don't want you to do that. Doesn't that sound amazing?
Well, there's something you gotta know.
Basically, it's all a sham, and it has been for a long time. Now, here in North America, the people that we saw pushing these things were all huge lobbyists and proponents for all these companies that are making these body scanners. We had Michael Chertoff, who used to be the Homeland Security chief. He'd go on TV and talk about how we need them. We need them now. But he never disclosed that he actually works for one of these companies. And that's how it all works. It's the revolving door of government. You get in there, do your service, quote-unquote, just for a few months, few years. You get out, and you lobby for the big guy. You got the contacts, go in, and you can do whatever you want. Doesn't that sound amazing? But it turns out that Italy is going to be one of the first countries to abandon this whole body scanner project slash scam. This is an article coming from Agence France-Presse. After a 6-month test, Italy's government will drop the use of full-body scanners for security checks in airports, judging them slow and ineffective, Italian daily Corriere della Sera reported Thursday. The scanners in the airports of Rome, Venice, and the southern city of Palermo are no longer in use, and Milan's airport is likely to stop using machines in the near future. We do not get good results from body scanners during testing. We take a long time to examine a person, more than with a manual inspection, said Vito Riggio, the president of Italy's aviation authority. Officials also believe measures taken to address privacy concerns over the use of the scanners have dampened the machine's effectiveness at locating arms and explosives. Ah, but they see your private parts quite well. A final decision on the use of the machines will be taken by a government commission. Passengers checked with body scanners are asked to pass through a regular metal detector, then walk into the scanner cabin, which is 10 feet tall and 6 feet wide. They are asked to stand with raised hands while the machine locates objects on the body through low-frequency electromagnetic waves. Now, we don't have the science yet on this. We don't know what it causes. We don't know what it could do. We just know that we have to believe in the government. They know science.
The science is in.
We have to believe our government. Science. Believe our government at all levels. They know what's best for you, don't they? Of course they always do. And we had an interesting warning that has to do a little bit with this. It has to do more with the free crack state, as I like to call it. And this is a warning coming from the own Canadian government. Listen here.
The drug wars in Mexico have reached such a pitch they've set off alarm bells in Ottawa. The Foreign Affairs Department issued a high-level travel warning today. It advised against driving from the United States into Mexico because of what it calls high levels of violence linked to drug trafficking in border areas. More from CTV's National Affairs correspondent Lisa LaFlamme.
This is no film set. It's daily life in the nearly four-year drug war that's paralyzing parts of Mexico just south of the U.S. border. While the Mexican government struggles to keep a lid on the escalating violence that's now claimed 28,000 lives, the Harper government is escalating its efforts also to protect Canadians, issuing one of its highest-level alerts yet. Canadians should avoid crossing Mexico's northern border by land, as shootouts, attacks, and illegal roadblocks may occur at any time.
What are you implying?
So what we're seeing here is that the government is finally coming out and saying, don't go visit Mexico. They say because of the drug war and all the problems thereof and all the drug violence, please do not go to Mexico. Government has the right to do that, protect its own citizens, good thing. But they don't really describe the context of the entire drug war in Mexico. I have an article here from Bloomberg, and this is an article from 3 weeks ago, talking about how Mexican gunmen killed the third mayor in a month. We now know that five Mexican mayors have been killed just this month, in September. Five mayors. Mayors of cities. Mayors of principalities. Mayors who are elected, gunned down, killed by these drug gangs. And as they mentioned in the piece, over 29,000 people, 29,000 people have died in the drug wars just in the last 3 or 4 years, less than that. Now, why does this come about? Why is this going on? Well, obviously, it's because marijuana is very dangerous. All these drugs are very dangerous. Heroin, very dangerous. What we need to do is we need to clamp down, militarize our police force, knock down the doors of everyone who's using drugs. False. As we can see here, what we have created is an illicit economy. When you create an illicit economy, you make something illegal. You make it so the people who are involved in the business are not in it for the sake of selling the product. They're in it for the sake of making money only. And they shall do that at all costs and all means. That means whipping out the machine guns and the shotguns and whatever it may be to protect their deliveries and the rest. We saw this violence already. Not in my lifetime, but maybe in your grandparents' lifetime. Maybe even in your parents' lifetime. We saw prohibition. We saw when alcohol was illegal. They used to say the same thing. Jan Gavru would get on TV. I tell you, it's all because of alcohol. Alcohol, not me. That's exactly what he would say. That was the call. That was the same thing. Now, we hear from these people all the time. They flood our airwaves. I always play clips of them here in Liberty Next because I think they're very important. These people flood our airwaves and tell us that the government knows best. They can tell you what to put in your body, and they're going to keep this illegal, and they're going to militarize more and more police, and we're going to go after them and do this in the offensive. When you realize how arbitrary it is, how we used to do the same thing over alcohol, and how many millions of people died, were killed by drug-running gangs, now back then was the alcohol-running gangs. It was Al Capone. That's what we had. But now we have Mexican gunmen. They go around and kill, 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 and they do that for an illicit product. Now, Portugal and other countries in the world have seen the light. They've legalized drugs. They see what's going on. They realize that it's not worth it. Portugal at one time had the most drug use in the European Union. So what did they do? Made it all legal. What happened then? It's no longer a problem. Legal people can sell it. If they have a dispute, they can go to court. It's over. It's done. It's finished. But still, people like this flood our airwaves every single day.
The top Republican on the House Judiciary Committee is blasting the Justice Department over medical marijuana. Texas Congressman Lamar Smith sending a strong letter to the Attorney General, Eric Holder, expressing his concern over what he calls the lax enforcement of federal drug laws. He says marijuana use is funding Mexican drug cartels and violence along the U.S.-Mexican border. Joining us now is that Congressman Lamar Smith. Congressman, there's a fairly new survey out that shows marijuana use is way up in this country. You think lax enforcement is part of the reason?
John, I do, and good to be with you. First of all, illegal drug use is now at a 10-year high. Marijuana use...
Oh, hello, Congressman.
Illegal drug use across the board is up. It was up 9% just last year. And so here we had the administration actually directing its federal prosecutors not to enforce federal law and not to go after the so-called medical marijuana distributors that are so often
make it feel really good for you,
illegal marijuana and illegal drug distribution. I don't understand why the administration doesn't want to enforce our drug laws that we have on the books. And that's one of the explanations, I think, for this
greatest country in the world
record in illegal drug use.
Well, and you said that in your letter. I want to read our viewers part of it. You wrote to the Attorney General.
Okay. So people like this, they flood the airwaves, and they basically spout these notions. They're saying, well, marijuana is funding the drug gangs. And that's exactly what they say about the Taliban. That's what they say about the Taliban in Afghanistan. Now, we're going to be talking about that and a little more here in Liberty in Exile. If you are interested in any of the articles I'm talking about, go to libertyinexile.com. Got them all there, all lined up. Lined up, 1, 2, 3, 4. All the videos, the YouTube links, and more. I have an open source show. I put everything that I use right there on my website, make it all open. I'm not hiding anything from you guys. I'm not making any of this up. It's all right there. And we will continue to do this here on Liberty in Exile, CJLO 1690 AM. Thank you for tuning in, or listening, or downloading. Now, talking about the drug war, it's also very important. Now, I've talked with other people about this, journalists and the like, and they say, oh, well, everyone always agrees about the drug war. We're all on the same side. Well, do something about it. Do something. This is going on, and 29,000 people have died now, just in Mexico, just because of that. Phoenix, Arizona is the number 2 kidnapping capital of the world, just because of this. It's all related. Now, I come at this from an economical standpoint, philosophical standpoint, and I shall continue to say it. And people look at me and they say, well, it's not logical. Well, look. I can go to the store right now, buy some Tylenol, down it, I'm dead. Same thing. Okay, it's not how dangerous it is, something else is going on. Governments profit off of illicit economies. And as we mentioned last week on Liberty in Exile, and we've been talking about the last 6 months, we exposed how the British and Canadian and American militaries are in Afghanistan importing the heroin, sending them back to the States in military aircraft. That was in The Independent. We covered it here. Liberty in Exile. Don't we do a great job? Now, speaking of Afghanistan and other things, many different things going on there. Many, many, many different things. I'd like to talk about the prime minister that we put into place, the puppet. I mean, the elected prime minister of Afghanistan. Now, there are interesting things that have come out. A lot of interviews that I listened to here in the last week, and especially in the WikiLeaks. And if you read that Rolling Stone article where Stanley McChrystal was basically headlined, a lot of his aides and people who were working for him were talking about Karzai and just how much power this guy has, and saying that he's not really the prime minister of Afghanistan. He's the prime minister of his own palace because he doesn't control anything else. You have to realize that people have been invading, foreigners have been invading Afghanistan for hundreds of years, and it's always the same result. That's why they call it the graveyard of empires. That's us, empire. That's the graveyard. Normally we should stay away, but we're not listening, are we? This is an article from the New York Times. You know, I've put articles like this out all the time. I just have to reiterate the facts, because the media does not do that for you. We do media assassination here, cut down, try to throw away the media filter.
The corporate filter that is down now, sponsored by Air Transit, sponsored by Siemens.
No, we're not sponsored. This is just me. This is just Liberty in Exile. No corporate sponsors here. Article from the New York Times. Karzai aid in corruption inquiry is tied to CIA. The aid to President Hamid Karzai of Afghanistan at the center of a politically sensitive corruption investigation is being paid by the Central Intelligence Agency, according to Afghan and American officials. Mohammad Zia Salih, the chief of administration for the National Security Council, appears to have been on the payroll for many years, according to officials in Kabul and Washington. It is unclear exactly what Mr. Salih does in exchange for his money, whether providing information to the spy agency, advancing American views on the inside of the presidential palace, or both. As we've seen, this is just another coup, just another control that the CIA has been doing. They overthrew the Shah of Iran in 1954. They overthrew all the banana republics in Latin America. How long are we going to allow this to go on? This goes on only because you consent to it, because you keep voting for the same people who keep putting this into action, keep supporting all these wars and all these unjustified actions around the world. We talked about the American Empire on this show. Not many people do in the media, and it's not framed that way. But that's what it is. It is a republic here at home, an empire abroad. Big government, small government, whatever it may be, we have big government abroad. Embassies, military bases, personnel, all over the world, my friends, tied to that. Of course, I've also talked about the heroin trade, how that's connected to Hamid Karzai, how his brother is the biggest heroin dealer in Afghanistan. Hamid Karzai's brother, also a CIA informant. Now, we're only bystanders to this. You and I are not political actors. We don't have any control. All we can do is sort of elucidate the facts, spread the information. Once it grows to popular standing, hopefully a change can occur. That's what we try to do here on Liberty in Exile. That's what we try to do every single week. Another article I have talks about, of course, the military-industrial complex. Many of you wondering what that is.
In the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist. We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes. We should take nothing for granted. Only an alert and knowledgeable citizenry can compel the proper meshing of the huge industrial and military machinery of defense with our peaceful methods and goals, so that security and liberty may prosper together.
Now, that was Dwight D. Eisenhower in his farewell speech to Americans right before John F. Kennedy took over the presidency. And he was talking about the military-industrial complex, which is basically the huge amalgamation of all the private security firms, gun runners, and all these people who have usurped power of the government in the last few years. Number one example, an article here from Agence France-Presse. Blackwater reaches $42 million settlement with U.S. over weapons smuggling. Now, you have to realize that most of our contract work over there in Afghanistan, Iraq, around the world, is done by Blackwater, now called XI, now called Z, as they call it. They change their name, basically, that's how people always do it. They change their names. So there's not the bad association. But the article says here, the U.S. State Department said Monday that Z, the controversial private security firm formerly known as Blackwater, has agreed to pay $42 million in fines to settle alleged export violations. It said the civil settlement was reached on Wednesday for 288 violations, quote, involving the unauthorized export of defense articles and provision of defense services to foreign end users, end quote, in a number of countries between 2003 and 2009. These violations did not involve sensitive technologies or cause a known harm to national security, said the State Department in a statement. Many of the alleged breaches occurred while Z, which protects U.S. officials in Iraq and Afghanistan, was, quote, providing services in support of U.S. government programs and military operations abroad. Now, these people are everywhere. These people are everywhere, and they control a lot of things, and they have huge government contracts, and they basically own everything abroad. That's how this works. That's how the mercenary game is played. Machiavelli talked about it over 500 years ago, and now we're talking about it today in the same realm. These people never get in trouble. They never get indicted. There's been many cases, and we talked about them here on the show, how Blackwater goes into a town, indiscriminately kills hundreds of civilians, just like that, and of course they don't get charged because it's, quote, a time of war. Time of war. Foreigners are coming into your country, guns on their backs. What are you going to do, sit there and take it? I'll tell you what the government is going to do. This is an article from Danger Room, Wired. Army reveals Afghan biometric ID plan. Millions scanned, carded by May. Wow, Big Brother got to Afghanistan before it got to Canada and the United States. Very interesting. There's an article last week that we covered where Homeland Security Secretary Janet Napolitano, Big Sis, as Drudge calls her, was interested in scanning irises, scanning the eyes of human beings at the borders. If anyone has seen the movie Minority Report, that's exactly what it's about. Anyone can track your movements, whether it is governments or private corporations, can track where you are. Welcome to the store. Well, hello. And they always do it for convenience. And they say it's for illegal immigrants. But this article is telling you who else it's being used against. Afghan insurgents. Quoting from the article, scanning prisoners' irises is just step one. In Afghanistan, local and NATO forces are amassing biometric dossiers on hundreds of thousands of cops, crooks, soldiers, insurgents, and ordinary citizens. I think that's everyone. And now, with NATO's backing, the Kabul government is putting together a plan to issue biometrically backed identification cards to 1.65 million Afghans by next May. The idea is to hinder militant movement around the country and to keep Taliban infiltrators out of the army, NATO training mission Afghanistan commander Lieutenant General William Caudle told Danger Room. The system allows the Afghans to thoroughly screen applicants and recruits for any potential negative past history or criminal linkages, while at the same time it provides an additional measure of security at checkpoints and major facilities to prevent possible entrance and access by malign actors in Afghanistan, Caldwell emails. It's a high-tech upgrade to a classic counterinsurgency move, simultaneously taking a census of the population, calling security forces of double agents, and cutting off guerrilla routes. General David Petraeus, now commander of the Afghan war effort, relied heavily on biometrics during his time in command of U.S. forces in Iraq. 20 to 25 Afghans a week are currently caught in the biometric sweep, military officials estimate. That number could grow significantly in the months to come. The Population Registration Division of Afghan's Ministry of Interior is embarking on a program to develop, print, and distribute biometrically enabled national ID cards. Now, how does that sound to you? Now, if they're doing it so well in Afghanistan, what stops them from doing it here? They keep talking about these homegrown terrorists. Well, we'll have to see where differentiate between the normal population and these homegrown terrorists, won't we? I see a pretext for involving this. I say that within the next 3 years, we're going to see an increased move, an increased campaign to use iris scanners, biometrics, whatever it may be, put the national ID card in use here in North America. Now it is. But there's one telling part of the article here. The U.S. military says it has assembled 410,000 of these biometric dossiers in the past year and a half. 410,000. Wow. Wowzers. They're doing their bidding. Now, one thing we do like to talk about on this show, and once again, any article you'd like to look at that I'm talking about will be on libertyinexile.com. We do like to talk about Big Brother. I find that very interesting. Very, very interesting. And there's an article here in the National Post, a newspaper up here in Canada, talking a little bit about the Big Brother state and how it's extending to, get this, your trash can. We've talked about recycling bins and how they kind of want to keep a hang on that, but here it goes. Officials in BC's Okanagan Valley, I'm totally butchered that, plan to use camera-equipped garbage trucks to film what gets dumped in order to make sure people are recycling properly. Since the introduction last year of the three-bin system providing garbage, recycling, and yard waste bins, waste contamination has become a big problem, said Peter Rosslier, manager of waste reduction at the Central Okanagan Regional District. While the system has helped to keep more material out of the landfill, it cost about $300,000 a year to pull out any materials in the wrong place. The cameras will be able to record what is thrown out, so city staff will have proof of bad behavior. Behavior spelled with a U. Bad behavior. And what do they say here? Quote, "We're not watching people. We're looking for material types. Paper, cardboard, garbage, in the wrong spot." That's exactly what it's all about, isn't it? It's just about watching, making sure that the plastic goes with the plastic, the yard waste goes with the yard waste. Everything is in place. Now, that's a great plan, isn't it?
Bullshit!
Now, I've been talking about this stuff for many months, and I shall continue to. This is ridiculous. Ridiculous. Big Brother State will extend over right into your trash can. The state is going to decide whether or not you are prone to bad behavior based on what you're throwing away. Now, other proponents of this will be like, wait, what's wrong with this? Oh, there's absolutely no wrong with this. It's amazing. It's great. It's super. We love it. If you don't see a problem with this, hey, you're free to create your own state. But here in these free republics, parliamentary democracies, we should not stand for this. We have rights that extend way beyond what trash bin I put my orange juice in. Okay, thank you. That's from the National Post. That's what's going on right now in BC. That's the plan, but that's how they always roll these things out, is slowly but surely. And I'm pretty sure that the proponents of this, those that are propagating this, are going to spread it all across North America. It'll be right here in Montreal. It'll be in the United States, in Mexico, wherever it may be. Big Brother shall grasp you. This is CJLO, 1690 AM in Montreal, Quebec. I'm your host, Daniel Lasoski of Liberty in Exile. Many more things to cover.
Hello, honey, it's me. What did you think when you heard me back on the radio? What did the kids say when they knew it was their long-lost daddy-o? Remember how we listened to the radio, and I said, that's the place to be. And how I got the job as an FM jock the day you married me. It was two kids and I was into AM rock, but I just had to run around. It's been 8 years since I left you, babe. Let me tell you about what's gone down. I am the morning DJ at WOLD. Playing all the hits for you, wherever you may be. The bright good morning voice who's heard but never seen. Feeling all the 45 going on 15. The drinking I did on my last big gig, it made my voice go low. They said that they liked the young sound when they let me go. So I drifted on down to Tulsa, Oklahoma, to do me a late night talk show. Now I've worked my way down home again near the Boise, Idaho. That's how this business goes. I am the morning DJ at WOLD. Playing all the hits for you, wherever you may be. The bright good morning voice who's heard but never seen. Feeling all the 45 going on 15. I'm making extra money doing high school sock hops. I'm the big time guest MC. You should hear me talking to the little children and listen what they say to me. I got a spot on the top of my head, just begging for a new toupee. There's a get this crazy dream that I just take off in my car. But you can travel long 10,000 miles and still stay where you are. Thinking that I should stop this jockeying and start that record store. Maybe I could settle down if you take me back once more. Okay, honey, I see. I guess he's better than me. Sure, old girl, I understand. You don't have to worry, I'm such a happy man. I am the morning DJ. W-O-L-D-D-D-D-D-D. Playing all the hits for you, wherever you may be. The bright good morning voice, who's heard but never seen. Feeling all of 45, going on 15. I am the morning DJ at WOLDDDDD.
WOLDDDD. All right, that's Harry Chapin, WOLD. Welcome back here to CJLO 1690 AM in Montreal. I'm here with Yael Osowski of Liberty in Exile. Now, different stories that I like to cover here in the last 8 minutes or so have to do with a number of different subjects. We, of course, are proponents of an open internet, therefore we shall talk about an article in the Telegraph today. Global Internet Treaty Proposed. Deal would enshrine in law the founding principles of open standards and net neutrality and protect the web from political interference. The proposal was presented at the Internet Governance Forum in Lithuania last week and outlined 12 principles of Internet governance, including a commitment from countries to sustain the technological foundations that underpin the web's infrastructure. Oh yes. The draft law has been likened to the Space Treaty, signed in 1967, which stated that all space exploration should be carried out for the benefit of all nations and guaranteed free access to all areas of celestial bodies. Under the proposed terms of the law, there would be cross-border cooperation between countries to identify and address security vulnerability and protect the network from possible cyber attacks or cyber terrorism. That's what it comes down to. Now, funny as it is, this article here in the Telegraph comes out the exact same time as an article from Associated Press. Interpol worried about spike in extremist websites. The chief of Interpol says the skyrocketing number of extremist websites is making it easier for terrorists to recruit middle-class youth around the world. Interpol Secretary General Ronald K. Nobel says terrorist recruiters are exploiting the web to target vulnerable people who are not on the radar of law enforcement. He says fighting this kind of terrorist recruitment is especially difficult because viewing websites is not necessarily criminal. No, it's not. Not at all. Noble said the number of extremist websites tracked by police was 12 in 1998 and 4,500 in 2006. He spoke Tuesday at a closed-door conference of world police chiefs in Paris. Interpol released his comments in a statement. So the pretext for controlling the internet and what we look at is coming about because of extremist websites. They say there's 4,500 extremist websites. Okay, how many websites are on the internet? I mean, I'm just chatting away, but I think 500 million? And you want to shut down, control most of the internet for 4,500? How long is this going to happen? To what end is this going to be? Why are we allowing them to invade every sphere of our private lives now? First, it was our own bodily persons, then it was our email, then it was our cell phones, then our cars, how we were tracked, all of that. Now it's what we look at online, the internet. And I played that interview a few months ago with Google CEO Eric Schmidt, who basically said, hey, if you have anything to hide, you shouldn't be looking at it in the first place. Why, thanks. Wisdom from the Google Chief Executive Officer. So this internet thing is a big deal, and the internet is talking about this, and I say the internet, colloquial term, of course, but those who visit different message boards and different sites of key interest to technological matters talk about this in dire terms, because this is very important. Any time that treaties are proposed, that laws are passed, someone is losing their rights. Now, how far does this go? That I can't say. That we don't know. We don't know what their plan is in Lithuania, but we do know that, for example, Pirate Bay was knocked down just last week. But, grace to the internet, it was brought back up. And as retaliation, MPAA, RPAA, those sites were knocked down as well. The internet succeeds one more win in the category. Now, we do like to talk about the brave New World health state. I believe that is always very important. A couple of articles that I've had here on the show, I've never been able to bring them up, never had the time. But I think this is very important, and we talked about this before. High fructose corn syrup, getting rebranded. Hey, it's getting a new name, everybody. Corn sugar. That's the new name. The good news. Consumption of high fructose corn syrup is at a 20-year low. The bad news. The folks who make this insidious sweetener aim to rebrand it to boost sales. High fructose corn syrup is cheaper than cane sugar and acts as a food preservative too. So the food industry loves the stuff. But it's been added to so many foods, yogurt, cereal, bread, drinks, and even condiments, that researchers have fingered it as a culprit in the obesity epidemic. The Corn Refiners Association has in the past marketed high fructose corn syrup as natural. But this columnist argues otherwise. High fructose corn syrup can be all natural if cornstarch happens to fall into a vat of alpamylase, soak there for a while, then trickle into another vat of glucoalgamize, then strain to remove the asparagus fungus likely growing on top, then find its way into some industrial-grade deoxylose emerserae. This funny coincidence didn't happen in nature until the 1970s in a lab somewhere in Japan. Now, the Corn Refiners Association, in my opinion, a great level of
douchebag.
Yes. Now, from what we've seen from these guys, they're trying to rebrand it. And they're not just going to name it corn sugar. They're going to make it so sugar is all the same. All sugar is the same. And what does sugar do? I have an article here from Reuters that I should have covered months ago, saying cancer cells slurp up fructose, U.S. study finds. This is coming from Reuters. Pancreatic tumor cells use fructose to divide and proliferate, U.S. researchers said on Monday in a study that challenges the common wisdom that all sugars are the same. Tumor cells fed both glucose and fructose use the two sugars in two different ways, a team at the University of California, Los Angeles found. They said their finding, published in the journal Cancer Research, may help explain other studies that have linked fructose intake with pancreatic cancer, one of the deadliest cancer types. Now, news like this comes out every single day about health, about what we put into our own bodies, and we're not always making the right decision. And that's, of course, one thing that we've struggled with, and we do struggle with, because food is very cheap in some instances and contains things that are not necessarily natural nor good for the human body. Now, I believe this is an important issue because it is your health. It is the brave new world state. Private corporations have made more money off of cheap and gross, disgusting food in the healthcare industry, making huge profits, pharmaceutical firms, on the entire notion of bad food that goes into our body and, as it's been proven and we've said on the show, gives you cancer. I just want you to be aware. I want those to know what is going on, know the information. And we here at Liberty in Exile will continue to do so as long as we are here and we are allowed to grace your ears. I'm your host, Dale Lasoski. Visit all of our links at libertyinexile.com. We got everything there, everything I talked about, the videos, the news, the articles, and the like. Please do enjoy that. For the listeners of the podcast, I shall be playing a clip of Ahmadinejad at the UN. Very interesting stuff. Stay in tune, open your ears. And do not submit to the Leviathan that hangs over your life every day. Au revoir et bonne chance. We'll be right back.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful, all praise be to Allah, the Lord of the universe, and peace and blessing be upon our Master and Prophet Muhammad and his pure household and his noble companions and all divine messengers. O God, hasten the arrival of Imam al-Mahdi and grant him good health and victory and make us his followers and those who attest to his rightfulness. Mr. President, dear colleagues, ladies and gentlemen, I am grateful to the Almighty God who has granted me the opportunity to appear before this World Assembly once again. I wish to begin by commemorating those who lost their lives in the horrible flood in Pakistan and express my heartfelt sympathy with the families who lost their loved ones, as well as with the people and the government of Pakistan. I urge everyone to assist their fellow men and women as a humane duty. Allow me to thank His Excellency Mr. Ali Abdussalam Tareki, the President of the 64th Session of the United Nations General Assembly, for all his efforts during his tenure. And I would also like to congratulate Mr. Joseph Dace, the President of the 65th Session of the United Nations General Assembly, and wish him all success. Dear colleagues, in past years, I spoke to you about some hopes and concerns. Some concerns involve the crisis in families, the security challenge, disrespect for human dignity, the deterioration of world economy, climate change, and disregard for human aspirations to achieve justice and lasting peace. After about 100 years of domination, the capitalist system and existing world order are unable to provide appropriate solutions to the problems that society faces. Thus, their demise has arrived. Therefore, I shall try to examine several causes for their failure and picture features for an ideal order. The first cause relates to our attitudes and beliefs. As you are well aware, divine prophets had the mission to invite everyone to monotheism, to love and justice, and to show mankind the path to prosperity. They invite men to contemplation and to seek knowledge in order to better appreciate the truth and to refrain from atheism and egoism. The essence of the message of prophets is one and the same. Every messenger has endorsed the messenger before him and given glad tidings about the next prophet to come, who presented a more complete version of the religion in accordance with man's capacity at the time. This trend continued until the last messenger of God, who presented the perfection of an all-inclusive religion. In opposition to the call by the prophets, the egoists and greedy stood up against their clear call, revolting against their messages. Nimrod countered Hazrat Abraham, Pharaoh countered Hazrat Moses, and the greedy countered Hazrat Jesus Christ and Hazrat Muhammad, may peace be upon all our prophets. In the recent centuries, human ethics and values have been rejected as a cause for backwardness. They were even portrayed as opposing wisdom and science because the proclaimers of religion in the dark ages of the West inflicted man with backwardness. Therefore, man's disconnection from heaven has detached him from his true self. Man, with his potential to understand the secrets of the universe, his instinct to seek truth, his aspiration for justice and perfection, his quest for beauty and purity, and his capacity, as God has said, to represent him on earth, has been reduced to a creature restricted by the materialistic world, with a mission to maximize individualistic pleasures. Human instinct then replaced true human nature. Human beings and nations are considered rivals, and the happiness of an individual or a nation is upheld at the cost of others, to the point of even eliminating or suppressing others. Rather than developing a constructive and evolutionary method of cooperation, it was replaced by a destructive struggle for survival. The lust for capital and domination replaced monotheism, which is the gate to love and unity. This widespread clash of the egoist and the divine with the divine values gave way to slavery and colonialism. A large part of the world came under the domination of a few Western states. Tens of millions of people were taken to slavery, and tens of millions of families were shattered as a result. All the resources, the rights, and the cultures of the colonized nations were plundered. Lands were occupied and indigenous people were humiliated and mass murdered. Yet nations rose up. Colonialism was alienated and the independence of nations was recognized. Thus, the hope for respect, prosperity, and security was revived amongst nations. In the beginning of the past century, beautiful mottos of freedom, human rights, and democracy created hopes for healing the deep wounds of the past. Today, however, not only those dreams are not realized, but memories, even at times more bitter than before, have been recorded in our history. As a result of the two world wars, the occupation of Palestine, the Korean and the Vietnam wars, the Iraq war against Iran, the occupation of Afghanistan and Iraq, as well as many wars in Africa, hundreds of millions of people were killed, wounded, or displaced. Terrorism, illicit drug production, poverty, and the social gaps have increased. The dictatorial and coup d'etat governments in Latin America committed unprecedented crimes with the support of the West. Instead of disarmament, the proliferation and stockpiling of nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons expanded, placing the world under a larger threat. As a result, apparently, the very same old goals of colonialists and the slave masters were pursued, but this time around with a new facade. The second cause for the failure of the existing world order and capitalism has to do with the current global management and its ruling structures. The League of Nations and after that, the United Nations were established with the promise to bring about peace, security, and the realization of human rights, which in fact meant a global management. One can analyze the current system of governance of world affairs by examining three events. The first is the event of the 11 September 2001, which has indeed affected the entire world for almost a decade. We recall that at the time, suddenly the news of an attack on the Twin Towers was broadcast using numerous footages of the incident. Almost all governments and known figures that mattered strongly condemned this incident. But then a propaganda machine came into full force. It was implied that the whole world was now exposed to a huge danger, namely that of terrorism, and that the only way to save the world would be to deploy forces into Afghanistan. Eventually, Afghanistan and shortly thereafter, Iraq were occupied. Now, please take note. It was said that some 3,000 people were killed on September 11, for which we are all very saddened. Yet, up until now, in Afghanistan and Iraq, hundreds of thousands of people have been killed, millions wounded and displaced, and the conflict is still going on and expanding. In identifying those responsible behind the September 11 attacks, there were three viewpoints. First, that a very powerful and complex terrorist group, able to successfully cross all layers of the American intelligence and security, carried out the attack. This is the prevalent viewpoint, which has been supported mainly and advocated by American statesmen. Second, that some segments within the U.S. government orchestrated the attack to reverse the declining American economy and its grips on the Middle East in order to save the Zionist regime. The majority of the American people, as well as most nations and politicians around the world, agree with this view. Third, it was carried out by a terrorist group, but that the American government supported and took advantage of the situation. Apparently, this viewpoint has fewer proponents. The main evidence for this viewpoint links the incident with a few passports found in the huge volume of rubble and a video of an individual whose place of domicile was unknown, but it was announced that he had been involved in oil deals with some American officials. It was also covered up and said that due to the explosion and fire, no trace of suicide attackers was found. Regardless of each of these three viewpoints, there remain a few questions to be answered. First, would it not have been sensible that first a thorough investigation should have been conducted by independent groups to conclusively identify the elements involved in the attack and then map out a rational plan to take measures against them? Second, assuming the viewpoint of the American government, is it rational to launch a classic war through widespread deployment of troops that led to the death of hundreds of thousands of people to counter a terrorist group? Third, was it not possible to act the way Iran conducted the Rigi operations, fighting the Rigi terrorist group who killed and wounded 400 innocent people? In the Iranian operation, no innocent person was harmed. It is proposed that the United Nations set up an independent fact-finding group for the event of September 11 so that in the future expressing views about it, so that to ensure that the different views about it are not banned from discussion in the future. I wish to announce here that next year the Islamic Republic of Iran will host a conference to study terrorism and the means to confront it. I invite officials, scholars, thinkers, researchers, and research institutes of all countries to attend this conference. The second cause for the demise of the existing world order is the occupation of the Palestinian territories. The oppressed people of Palestine have lived under the rule of an occupying regime for 60 years, been deprived of freedom, security, and the right to self-determination, while the occupiers are given recognition. On a daily basis, the houses are being destroyed over the heads of innocent women and children. People are deprived of water, food and medicine in their own homeland. The Zionists have imposed five all-out wars on their neighboring countries and on the Palestinian people. The Zionists committed the most horrible crimes against the defenseless people in the wars against Lebanon and Gaza. The Zionist regime attacked a humanitarian flotilla in a blatant defiance of all international norms and kills civilians. This regime, which enjoys the absolute support of some Western countries, regularly threatens the countries in the region and continues publicly to announce the assassination of Palestinian figures, while Palestinian defenders and those opposing this regime are pressured, labeled as terrorists and called anti-Semites. All values, even that of the freedom of expression, which in Europe and the United States seem to matter so much and are so important, have been sacrificed at the altar of Zionism. Solutions are doomed to fail because the right of the Palestinian people is not taken into account. Would we have witnessed such horrendous crimes if instead of recognizing the occupation, the sovereign right of the Palestinian people had been recognized? Our unambiguous proposition is the return of the Palestinian refugees to their homeland and the reference to the vote of the people of Palestine, all Palestinians, to exercise their sovereignty and decide on the type of government. The third cause for the demise of the existing order has to do with the outlook on nuclear energy. Nuclear energy is clean and cheap and a heavenly gift, which is amongst the most suitable alternatives to cut pollutions emanating from fossil fuels. The Non-Proliferation Treaty allows all member states to use nuclear energy without limit, and the International Atomic Energy Agency is mandated to provide member states with technical and legal support. The nuclear bomb is the worst inhumane weapon and one which must totally be eliminated. The NPT prohibits its development and stockpiling and calls for nuclear disarmament. Nonetheless, please note that some of the permanent members of the Security Council and nuclear powers, i.e. those who hold the nuclear bomb, have resorted to a measure. They have equated nuclear energy with the nuclear bomb and have distanced this energy from the reach of most nations by establishing monopolies and pressuring the IAEA, while at the same time they have continued to maintain, expand, and upgrade their own nuclear arsenals. You may have heard that in the current year, the United States administration has asked for $80 billion to upkeep its nuclear bombs alone. This has entailed the following. Not only the nuclear disarmament has not been realized, but also nuclear bombs have been proliferated in some regions, including by the occupying and intimidating Zionist regime. I would like here to propose that the year 2011 be proclaimed the year of nuclear disarmament and nuclear energy for all, nuclear weapons for none. In all these cases, of course, I admit that the United Nations has been unable to take any effective course of action that has been viable or meaningfully viable. Unfortunately, in the decade proclaimed by it as the International Decade for the Culture of Peace, for example, hundreds of thousands were killed and injured as a result of war, aggression and occupation, and hostilities and antagonism having been increased. Ladies and gentlemen, very recently the world witnessed an abhorrent and inhumane act of burning the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran is the divine book and the eternal miracle of the Prophet of Islam. It calls for worshipping the one God, justice, compassion toward people, development and progress, reflection and thought, defense of the oppressed and resistance against oppressors, and it names with respect the previous messengers of God, like Noah, Abraham, Isaac, Joseph, Moses, and Jesus Christ, may peace be upon all the prophets, and endorses them. They burned the Quran to burn all these truths and good judgments. However, the truth cannot be burned. Quran is eternal, because God and truth are everlasting. This act, and any other act which widens the gap and distances between nations, is evil. We must wisely avoid playing into the hands of Satan. On behalf of the Iranian nation, I pay respect to all divine books and their followers. This is the Quran, and this is the Bible. We pay respect to both books, as both are dear to us. Dear friends, esteemed friends, for years, the inefficiency of capitalism and the existing world management structures have been exposed enough for us to understand what they mean. And the majority of states and people have begun a quest for fundamental changes and for the to allow justice and global relations to prevail. The cause for the United Nations' ineptitude is its unjust structure. Major powers have monopolized the Security Council due to their veto privilege and sidelined the General Assembly, which is the main pillar of the organization. In the past several decades, at least one of the permanent members of the Security Council has always been a party to a conflict. When both the judge and the defender or prosecutor are on the same side of the conflict, how can you expect justice? They feel immune as a result of the aggressions due to the structure of the United Nations. For example, if Iran enjoyed the veto privilege, would the Security Council and the IAEA Director General have taken the same position on its nuclear issue as they have today? Dear friends, the United Nations is the key center for coordinating common global management. Its structure needs to be reformed in a manner that all independent states and nations are able to participate in the global governance and actively and constructively. The veto privilege should be revoked, and the General Assembly should be the highest body, and the Secretary General should be the most independent official, and all his positions and activities should be taken with approval of the General Assembly and should be directed towards promoting justice and eliminating discrimination in the world order. The Secretary General should not come under pressure from powers and or the country hosting the organization, that is the United Nations, for stating the truth and administering justice. It is proposed that the General Assembly hold within a year and in the framework of an extraordinary session finalize the reformation of this body's structure, the United Nations structure, that is. The Islamic Republic of Iran has clear proposals in this regard and suggestions and stands ready to participate actively and constructively in the process. Ladies and gentlemen, I announce clearly that the occupation of other countries under the pretext of freedom and democracy is an unforgivable crime. The world needs the logic of compassion and justice and inclusive participation instead of the logic of force, domination, unilateralism, war, and humiliation. The world needs to be governed by virtuous people like the divine prophets. The two vast geographical spheres, namely Africa and Latin America, have gone through historic developments during the past decade that have altered their fates. The new approaches in these two continents, which are based on increasing level of integration and unity, as well as on localizing the growth and development models, have borne considerable fruit to the people of those regions. The awareness and wisdom of the leaders of these two continents has overcome the regional problems and crises without and free of the domineering interference of non-regional powers. The Islamic Republic of Iran has expanded its relations with Latin America and Africa in all aspects in recent years. And about the glorious Iran. The Tehran Declaration was a hugely constructive step in confidence-building efforts, which was made possible through the admirable goodwill by the governments of Brazil and Turkey, along with the close and sincere and honest cooperation of the Iranian government. Although the declaration received inappropriate reactions by some Western powers and was followed by an unlawful resolution, it still holds valid. We have observed the regulations of the IAEA more than our commitments, yet we have never submitted to illegally imposed pressures, nor will we ever do so. It has been said that they seek to pressure Iran into a dialogue. Well, firstly, Iran has always been ready for a dialogue based on respect and justice. Secondly, the methods based on disrespecting nations have long become ineffective. Those who have used intimidation and sanctions in response to the clear logic of the Iranian nation are in real terms destroying the remaining credibility of the Security Council and the trust of nations for this body, proving once and again how unjust is the function of the Council. When they threaten a great nation, a great people such as Iran, which is known throughout history for its scientists, poets, artists, and philosophers, and whose culture and civilization is synonymous to purity, submission to God, and seeking justice, how can they ever expect that other nations grow confidence, have confidence in them? My friends, it goes without saying that domineering methods in managing the world, and namely capitalism, have failed. Not only has the era of slavery and colonialism and domineering the world passed, the path to the revival of old empires are now blocked as well. We have announced that we stand ready for a serious and free debate with the American statesmen to express our transparent views on issues of importance to the world in this very venue. It is proposed right here that in order to have a constructive dialogue, an annual free debate be organized within the General Assembly. In conclusion, dear colleagues and friends, the Iranian nation and the majority of the world's nations and governments are opposed to the current discriminatory management of the world. This inhumane nature of management has put it at a dead end and requires a major overhaul. Reforming the world's affairs and bringing about tranquility and prosperity requires the participation of all, pure thought and the divine and human management that we have been given. We are all of the idea and view that justice is the basic element for peace, durable security, and the spread of love among peoples and nations. It is in justice that mankind seeks the realization of his aspirations, rights, and dignity, since he is wary of oppression, humiliation, and ill treatment. The true nature of mankind is manifested in the love for other fellow humans and the love for all good in the world. Love is the best foundation for establishing relations amongst people and amongst nations. As Vahshi Bolghi, the great Iranian poet, says, quote, "From the fountain of youth, drink 1,000 sips. You'll still die if you don't have love's grip." Unquote. In making a world full of purity, safety, and prosperity, people are not rivals but companions. Those who seek their happiness but in the sorrow of others, and their welfare and safety but in others' insecurity, those who see themselves superior to others, are out of the path of humanity and are in evil's course. The economy and materialistic means are only tools, some tools, to serve others, to create friendship and strengthen human connections for spiritual perfection. They are not tools for show-off or means of dominating others. Men and women complement each other and family unit with pure, loving, and long-lasting relations of the spouses, which becomes the center and the guarantee for the continuity and the bringing up of generations, for true pleasure, for spreading true love, and for reforming societies. Women, the woman is a reflection of God's beauty and is the source of love and care. She is the guardian of purity and exquisiteness of society. The tendency to toughen the soul and behavior of women deprives them from their very basic right of being a loving mother and a caring wife. It would result in a more violent society with irreversible defects. Freedom is a divine right that should serve peace and human perfection. Dear colleagues, pure thoughts and the will of the righteous are keys to the gaze of a pure life full of hope, liveliness, and beauty. This is the promise of God that the earth will be inherited by the pure and the righteous, and the people free from selfishness will take up the management of the world. Then there will be no trace of sorrow, discrimination, poverty, insecurity, and aggression. The time for true happiness and for the blossoming of the true nature of humankind, the way God has intended, will arrive. All those seeking for seeking justice and all the free spirits have been waiting for this moment and have been promised such glorious times. The complete human, the true servant of God, and the true friend of mankind, whose father was from the generation of the beloved Prophet of Islam, and whose mother was from the true believers of the Jesus Christ, shall wait along with Jesus, the Son of Mary, and the other righteous, to appear on those brilliant days and assist humanity in welcoming them. We should join ranks and see justice as would be befitting of men. Praise to love and worship. Praise to justice and freedom. Praise to the true humanity, the complete human, the true companion of humankind, and peace be upon you and all the righteous and the pure. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Thank you very much.